because you get fives on all the tests doesn't mean that you can talk any time you have. One we just talked about yesterday's attempts, and let's hear where everyone thought, what went well, what didn't go well, things like that. Any response on yesterday? Any effects? Anyone like to talk about any effects that they had, how the experience went?
So the first 10 nights brought a problem to my partner. The first thing he did was give me advice and things like that, you know. And even I tried to carry it on a little further. And then anyway,
how did you feel when you got the advice?
Well, I mean, of course, my reaction is a little bit on the stage side, you know, since you know that A, you know, this isn't the thing you should be doing, and you know why it shouldn't be done. So, I mean, I didn't really react to it, you know, on that level. But I could just see, I went on and continued the conversation to see where it would lead, because it was going to start like that. And you just basically became less and less interested in the lead of your mind, because immediately it was, well, have you tried to work on this thing? Well, have you noticed it? You know, and all these different, you know, ideas like that. And, you know, so that you just realize that this is pointless. You know, if I didn't know about it, and I didn't want to work on it, why would I be telling about it to begin with?
Yeah.
So you just, you know, just.
And that was even staged, as you said, and it just naturally happened.
Yeah.
Lamahan.
As I was listening to the person, I was finding it difficult to separate the function of just showing that I understood and going into giving or even some kind of advice.
Yeah.
I felt myself going towards giving some advice, but I had to restrain.
Did you?
I did first.
And how did it work out?
It led to, you know, better communication.
Yeah. Anyone else?
How do you avoid from being too, perhaps too mental when it comes to responding?
I think just in the beginning, it's like when you're driving a car in the beginning. When, of course, you know how to drive a car. So you can drive, you can play checkers at the same time, you can eat and everything like that. But when you see someone who's just learning how to drive, it's so obvious because they're there, you know. Everything has to really go through their every little part of their intelligence and their mental about every little bit. But after a while, you get the hang of it, and you could sleep and drive. You can do almost anything. I once heard that in the old Radha Dharmadhar party days, there was one bus driver whose name was Vipra. And the way that the Radha Dharmadhar party used to work was that they didn't want to waste time driving from one spot to another during the day, so they would drive at night, and the devotees would sleep, and the bus driver would do the driving. So of course the tendency was for him to sleep too. And that was obviously very dangerous. So to make sure that Vipra stayed awake, he'd be driving, and to make sure he'd stay awake, there would be one devotee who was assigned to keeping him awake the whole night. So this devotee, with Sriram, he told me the story that invariably, all night as he was driving, he'd be going like this, and his Sriram would they hit him and he'd go. and he'd never gotten in an accident. He would do this night after night. He never got in an accident, and when they'd arrive at the destination after driving all night, he would have had a full night's sleep. All the driver also. So he was really expert. But we don't recommend anyone imitating. Okay, any other experiences from yesterday's counseling session?
I was finding that instead of kind of beating around the bush, but then trying to find the emotion that person was feeling, and then by finding that emotion, then you could more easily deal with or solve the problem.
Help him solve his problem.
Well, help him, yeah. Because then it became became obvious what you're dealing with.
So you're saying to find the emotion directly, the feeling, it actually helped you. Oh, yeah, that's interesting. So once they acknowledged that they were afraid, they had to talk about overcoming the fear. And if they were worried, they had to overcome the worry. If it was something else, concerned.
Otherwise, the questioning can go on so many different ways.
So I found that the picture really helps, of that there's a feeling, and people, because the feeling needs expression, they encode the feeling in words, and you have to find out what the feeling, because that's at the bottom of it. Achyuta, did you have a hand raised?
Yeah, I had one problem when I was counseling. That was that I would not get any information out of the person I was speaking. I was saying that I find it really hard to associate with the movies. So then I agreed on that.
He said that, or you said that.
Yeah, he would not continue speaking. Like, I didn't know what to say.
Also, he said that, or you said that?
He said that, and I listened.
And what did you respond to that?
It's really hard. I was replying.
Huh?
Yeah, I was just replying as it's really hard.
Okay, did you put both parts in there?
No.
Okay.
But he would not go on talking, so I didn't know how to pull more information out of him, so that was my...
You don't have to pull. You know, he has a problem. It's not your responsibility to pull. It's his response. It's his problem. It's not your problem. That's one thing to always keep in mind.
I was just thinking on that second point, though, that if we're trying to solve people's problems, that would be very difficult. But if you're again trying to look for the feeling that they're, you know, why they actually are feeling that, then they'll solve it themselves. Trying to actually understand the
peripherals. That goes back to the first or second lesson, that whose problem is it? Don't try to solve the problems of other people, otherwise you'll be frustrated just as you're talking about. If it's your job to solve his problem, but he's not talking, so therefore you're in anxiety because you can't solve his problem, you can't do your job. But it's not your job to solve the problem. It's his job to solve the problem. And if he wants you to, you may be able to help him. If you take... what are you going to do to force him to talk? That was what you were experiencing. You can't, because you ran out of power. He wasn't talking and there was nothing you could do about it. Because you took on the problem ownership as if it was yours. But it was his problem. Follow? It's a question of ownership there. That's... Just now.
On the question of problems of ownership, it seems that as creatures we do take on the problems of others, and that we do accept some anxiety, and that it's part of our process. But when asking about the line across, we're crazy.
I don't agree.
Maybe give an example, like say, there's a devotee who's doing okay, would say, but you know he's not really advancing. There's some problem there. But he's just apathetic, and he's a nice devotee, you want to help him. But he's not really acknowledging he has a problem. But it's kind of...
Until he's ready to acknowledge that he has a problem, you're going to have a very difficult time dealing with it.
But then say he's kind of slowly... If
he's not going to acknowledge that he has a problem, and you try to deal with a person who has a problem, that he won't admit that he has a problem, it's not going to work. I've spoken about this point to counselors, and I've seen it with Gurukula children. It's fashionable to come late to this class. Anyway, it's the last class. Hare Krishna. It doesn't work. You can't solve someone's problem for them unless they ask you to help them solve it. That's the first thing. And that's also them admitting they have a problem. Don't fall into this. You're going to be very frustrated. You're going to run out of energy because you're going to run out of power. You're going to take everyone's problems.
And as creatures, we go out and say we meet somebody and we attempt to enter consciousness.
That's right. And we tend... Well, see, different people preach in different ways. The way I like to preach is to you preach about using human life responsibly, and you try to get them to be responsible for themselves. I don't like that the other way at all. Even spiritual master to disciple. What to speak of someone who's not surrendered? If someone is surrendered, yes, then you could, out of compassion, accept their problem as your problem. But if someone has not surrendered, because then you can solve it. You have the power to solve it. You follow? Oh, I've seen this so many times, and you probably have seen it so many times too. I mean, I even had an experience of it today. I was talking to someone, and I was in a situation where I had to wait somewhere, and I had gone somewhere, and it didn't work out, and I had to wait. So I said, boy, I have so many things to do. It's really frustrating for me even to be, you know, just doing nothing and waiting. And immediately I got some advice back, you know, don't worry. And immediately, I didn't want to hear it. I already know that it's okay and it's in Krishna's hands. I just was, you know, letting off some steam, practically speaking. You know, it's just, it's pressing in. And if she was here in yesterday's class, she would have just said, sounds like you're frustrated before because you have many things to do and you're... And you have to just wait without doing them. And I said, yeah, you really understand me. Yeah, that's all I really wanted at that time. I didn't need to be preached to. Anyway, these classes are all confidential. But anyway, after she said it, I thought it would make a good example for our class. I immediately felt that was the last thing I wanted at that time, is some advice that you preach to. I just wanted someone to accept that I was feeling frustrated. And if she wanted to try, you can't solve another person's problem. So maybe it was my fault, and maybe the problem could have been solved by a higher level of Krishna consciousness, but I wasn't ready to have my problem solved at that time. Nor was there any need, actually. Especially if you're going to be dealing with new devotees, they can't even spell surrender, what to speak of surrender. You have to be very careful about this. And in my mind, it's proper training for someone. Is you help them learn how to solve their problems, and then you become a resource for them to solve their problems. When they need help, they come to you, and according to your ability and your experience and your knowledge and Krishna's mercy, you can help them. But you want to train them to solve the problems. Otherwise, how many people can you deal with? Four. You follow this point? This is the way we usually think. So you're not thinking in an atypical way. You're thinking in the typical way. But I've tried to show you the wisdom of reversing that.
I've been reversing this situation, and I'm worried I have to take this approach, yet I see the person is probably going to make a decision which is going to take them into some trouble. Maybe that's what he needs to
do. That's the exact same example in the Gurukula reference, with the Gurukula reference that I said over there. And did you recognize it as the same? The teacher sees that if the child continues doing this very same thing, one day it's going to cause him trouble. But yet, he's going to run out of power. So you approach him See, there's another part to the counseling course. You approach with what's called an I message. You say, it's disturbing me to see you acting in this way because I can see that one day it's going to cause you this and this trouble. So you're telling what it's an accurate statement. You're not calling him anything. But that's a different part of the course that we don't get to here. We're just into the value of listening. But there are things you can do. You don't just let him drift off. You give him a warning. But if he doesn't accept that he has a problem, what can you do? Ultimately, he has a problem. And your first duty is to make sure that you go back to Godhead. And everyone else you can take by your good association, fine. And I don't think it's lack of compassion either. It's just intelligence and acknowledgement of reality. Because you're not the doer. Karta hum, ichimanyate. Anyway, you think about it and see if you can see how you feel. Any other questions? Any other? Yeah, on the side, you
want. I had a question based on some of the points of mental who was bringing up. Like you were saying, he was really kind of getting into the mood of the feeling, the emotion of the person he was counseling with him. So then
Is that what you were saying? I thought you were saying you were acknowledging the emotion and recognizing it as opposed to feeling it yourself, which I would very much caution you. This is often something that's given in a counseling textbook to be empathy. Empathy is a very dangerous thing. It has its glorious side, and it has a great, great danger too, because what it means is that you're going to share the karma of this person. Go ahead.
So the question was, like, is it proper in counseling to say, like, yeah, actually I have had a similar experience, or yeah, I also feel that way sometimes when I'm in that situation. Is that a proper response?
In the right place, it's a proper response. In the wrong place, it's an improper response. Just like if I say, boy, I'm really disappointed that this happened today, that I didn't do well on my test. So, and then the response being, yeah, I had the same experience. So I want to talk about me right now, and you immediately change the subject to you, which is a typical type of thing. And actually, in some cases, it may have count. If the person perceives it as a change of subject, it may not work. If the person perceives it like he really doesn't understand me, that isn't exactly the same situation. He doesn't really understand me. It won't work. If at a particular time some sympathy may be called for, when you discern that this person is feeling that he's the only one who has this experience, as we often feel like we're really alone with this experience, and then that might help. But I think it's such a later stage that you really have to know whether it's the right thing to do or the improper thing to do, if it's going to be effective or counterproductive.
You explained what you mean by feeling empathy to share the person's. And also, why is it in the counseling course there's sort of qualities?
Huh? Well, there's two different teachers, so different teachers may have different ideas. But it's a good quality that you have to be soft and compassionate towards and sympathetic. But to have full empathy is quite. It's dangerous, actually. I've heard many people who do this kind of thing also tell me that. And I have that experience. It also depends what kind of an individual you are. One type of an individual is, how to describe it without sounding too new agey. certain, this is the way I perceive it, that certain types of individuals are very compact within themselves. And other types of individuals, they're always very aware with how everyone in the room is feeling all the time. And everyone who they deal with, they mirror very easily the consciousness of others. So that is a blessing, because you always know what everyone's feeling and thinking. And it's a curse, because you always are aware of what everyone is thinking and feeling. And you know, sometimes you know, you're trying to think something, and you're trying to concentrate on something, but there's interference coming through everyone else's consciousness. So some people call that a sort of a sensitivity. And then the people who are more compact in themselves, sometimes they're not aware of how what they are doing is affecting others. And on the other hand, they don't get that type of interference from everyone else. So both, because they're material qualities, both are a blessing and both are a curse. So I think for a person who is very compact in himself, you tell them that he has to be empathetic. And if a person is not compact in himself, but he's rather always experiencing everything that everyone is experiencing, then you have to tell him to be not so empathetic. I have just reconciled a difficult question. Yeah.
You're saying that it's dangerous, but you're not necessarily saying that it's not the... So it's dangerous, you're not saying that it doesn't have a place. It's just that it has to be done in a certain way.
It has...
Because it can be effective as much as it's dangerous.
Yes, but... See, the person is identifying with the problem. He has nothing to do with his problem. Actually, he, the soul, has nothing to do with the problem. Considering that the counselor, if he's thinking that he's not his body, if he's actually a Krishna conscious counselor talking from a higher platform, nor his mind, and if he's thinking he's a servant of Krishna, he's not identifying with his own mind and problems. It's, why should he identify with someone else's mind and problems?
Well, it's not that he'd have to identify with it, but he could, to empathize wouldn't mean that he would have to identify with it emotionally, or to bond with it, but...
Well, this is, see, here's where we're running into a little problem, because I've read so many books on this, that I'm looking at possibly the very technical understanding of empathy, which really recommend, which in counseling they do, I believe they'll caution one about this. Although they, I think, they don't want to use the word sympathy, because that implies some condescension. And empathy is almost the right word, where you sort of feel for the other person, right? But there is an empathy to feel the emotion that the person is experiencing. You have to identify with it, unfortunately, and therefore most psychiatrists are stark raving mad, and if they're not when they begin, they will be very soon. I mean, that it's just a fact, because you're taking on the burden of a lot of people's karma. Even this is considered the great danger in being a Madhyam Adhikari guru. What to speak of a Kanista Adhikari guru, but a Madhyam Adhikari guru is that one will tend to empathize and meditate on everyone's problems, the problems of the disciples, and it's very dangerous. But go ahead. But on the other side, one shouldn't be cold or unsympathetic. But one just has to watch out for that emotional bonding between one and the other individual. Because not only does he not have anything to do with his problem, you also don't have anything to do with this problem.
But there are elements of empathy.
Yes. Yes. So I'm thinking in somewhat of a technical way, and also from that other point that I brought out first.
Is it accurate to say that just the word empathy itself, just so you can see it from the other person's perspective, without doesn't necessarily mean that you are truly emotionally involved, does it?
Okay, but if you're seeing implies knowing. If knowing, I'd say knowing is 100% essential, but empathy implies feeling as well, according to my understanding. Feeling this, practically feeling the same feeling. It's more than the seeing, there's knowing, and then there's feeling.
Could it be knowing and feeling without getting submerged in feeling?
Can you feel it without getting submerged in it? You know, playing with fire.
Yeah. But also, if you were doing it on behalf of as a service to Krishna, then it seems that there's also, if you retain that
aloof. Well, see, that means you have a little aloofness.
So if that's kept in focus, then. And it seems that there's protection from.
Be careful, because sometimes we think we're doing it just for Krishna, but actually we like doing it, and we don't mind using what we like in Krishna's service, and there's a difference. One is a lot more dangerous than the other. Now, I possibly haven't been able to steer right down the middle enough in this issue, but I hesitate to go into it too much further, because there are probably a few devotees who are very interested in this and who probably do more counseling and wondering and trying to discern the exact right attitude. And there's probably a bunch of other devotees who can't figure out what we're talking about. So any discussion on how this one went? How did you find it different from yesterday's? Did you find you improved any? Backslid into simply advice giving? Did you let the other person talk? Nitai?
When I was counseling, I didn't feel like yesterday, I know I gave some advice, but today I didn't feel like it. If I didn't give any advice, it was involuntary. I don't feel any advice at all.
So, but the do you think it worked well, though? Was the conversation winning? Maharaj, did you feel understood?
Yeah, very much so. I think that he wasn't trying to, that I'll tell him what to do, but to draw out of me what I can do is probably the problem.
Anyone else have anything they'd like to relate?
Just by listening to the person who was talking.
Did that actually happen?
Yeah.
Was it something sort of real?
Yeah.
And you came to the conclusion yourself?
Yeah.
There it is. Was it a solution that you would have thought of? Any other comments about their sessions?
Yeah. Just a question.
Louder though.
Is there a point in
constant? Of course. If someone wants some advice from you, and you actually have some ideas that you think can help them, then they're asking you, and in that sense, it's that expression that I used probably a few days ago, you don't counsel anyone until they hire you. So you're hired when they ask you. But usually, the problem is the opposite, that we give advice when people don't want to hear our advice. Result. Again, we were really, this part of the course was on listening. I didn't feel capable myself giving a course on counseling, nor did we have the time to do anything like that. So there are more stages in dealing with a person than just listening to them and responding with understanding. What this does is tell the person that you've understood what they said, but that doesn't automatically solve each and every problem. But what it does is it enhances the communication. It sometimes, as in our case history study back there, it sometimes can be a solution in and of itself, but it's not always going to work so ideally. So not that you're not allowed to, ever allowed to give anyone advice, but to give someone advice who doesn't want to hear your advice is useless. Or at the wrong time, they may be ready to hear it later. Maybe they want you to want to make sure that you understand that what the problem actually is, and then after getting it out, and then they're wishing for some advice and they'll ask, and that's also all right. But often, the case is that we really don't know how to help someone. That also happens a lot. But you really don't know the answer, and then giving advice isn't always productive either. If you actually don't know what the solution is.
We were also, you know, discussing like that this one trade on it was listen nicely to me, I think basically I asked listen nicely to me. We also got went, you know, a little step further because we were both dealing with this very real problem we're having. And I got to the point in the conversation where continuing just on the listening thing, we just kind of went out of road a little bit and I asked, well, what is your opinion? What do you consider could be helpful like this? And it was really useful, actually. I mean, it didn't solve my problem, but then actually the problem we were dealing with was something bigger than both of us. You know, it's a whole management thing. But at the same time, it got to where I could see a balance in the situation. Or at least the frustration of the problem is not there.
And even just being able to express it in such a way that someone, you know that someone has understood it, brings some relief.
Yeah.
Any other comments? Thank you. Comments or questions? Person on the board.
I think that couple beginning responding like this, it definitely did seem to bring out a lot of further thought from him, and then he just started talking, and then pretty soon the problem was Bruce was kind of guarded, kind of dealt with different things, sub-problems, and then all of a sudden the new thing was present, and it's like, kind of mechanically went to this, so it wouldn't have done, but then it did, I really felt it.
And it came to the essence.
I don't know, how you felt, how you felt that.
I think it helped.
See, if there's a mechanical way of problem solving too, not even mechanical, but naturally you take things through different stages. First, it's trying to understand the problem deeply and developing a relationship, then coming up with alternative solutions through questioning. This is all ways of the person taking responsibility for his own problem too. Alternative solutions, different ways you can approach the problem, different things you could do, from tolerance to going out and getting a job to talking to the person frankly or having someone else talk to the person. So many different alternative solutions, then picking a solution, then talking about what are the steps you have to go through, and then what is the first step and when are you going to start. This may take place over many sessions. But there are, I wouldn't exactly call them formulas, but there are steps that one can use to approach the whole idea of counseling. And I think this is a very simple and good, at least, first step. Any other comments or questions or points? Okay, then we'll end with Birijan reading something from his favorite magazine, Back to Godhead magazine, 25 years in pictures. There was a very interesting article here, which is a compilation of quotes from Prabhupada on on the spiritual master, how to find him, how to honor him, how to follow him. Now, this course that you have completed is called The Art of Teaching. Now, we have hoped in this course that you have learned some techniques and also gotten some inspiration on how to be and what it means to be a teacher and different techniques that you can use while teaching. We also hope that you had an abundance of association with many, many good teachers, and that you learned not only the subject matter that they were teaching, but you also learned from their example how to teach and how to associate amongst devotees. Ultimately, we pray that by Prabhupada's mercy, that you all become teachers of Krishna consciousness or spiritual masters. I would like to read some words that Prabhupada said on this. Under the subsection, it begins continuing the disciplic succession. Srila Prabhupada tells his disciples that they too should become spiritual masters. Quote, "Spiritual master is not a new invention. So all my students present here who are feeling so much obliged, I am obliged to them because they are helping me in this missionary work. At the same time, I shall request them all to become spiritual masters. Every one of you should become spiritual masters next. And what is your duty? Whatever you are hearing from me, whatever you are learning from me, you have to distribute the same in toto, without any addition or alteration. Then all of you will become spiritual masters. To become a spiritual master is not a very wonderful thing. One simply has to become a sincere soul. It is not difficult. It is difficult when you manufacture something. But if you simply present what you have heard from your spiritual master, it is very easy. If you want to become over-intelligent, to present something, to interpret something over what you have heard from your spiritual master, then you'll spoil the whole thing. Don't make any addition or alteration. Simply present it as it is. Remain always a servant of your spiritual master and present the thing as you have heard it. You will be a spiritual master. This is the secret. One should not think, I am not qualified to become a guru. No, you are qualified if you follow strictly the parampara system. If you simply preach his cult, my dear friend, my dear brother, you surrender to Krishna, then you become a spiritual master. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has asked everyone to become a guru. Everyone. Because there's a need of gurus. The world is full of rascals. Therefore, there is the need of so many gurus to teach them. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, Amara agyai guru hai tare desh. Wherever you are living, become a guru and deliver them. Suppose you are living in a small neighborhood. You can become a guru of that neighborhood and deliver them. How is it possible? I have no education, I have no knowledge. How can I become guru and deliver them? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, it is not at all difficult. Yari deka tari kaha Krishna upadesh. This is your qualification. If you simply deliver the message given by Krishna, you become guru. Krishna said, Sarvadamam Prityaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja. Give up all other engagements and surrender to me. You preach. You request everyone. Sir, you surrender to Krishna. Then you become guru. It is a very simple thing. Krishna said, Manmana Bhava Madbhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru. Think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer obeisances to me. You say, you become a devotee of Krishna. You offer obeisances. Here is a temple. Here is Krishna. Please come here. So this is a guru's qualification. The guru does not show some magic or produce some wonderful thing to become guru. People are giving me credit that I have done miracles. But my miracle is that I have carried the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yari deka tari kaha Krishna upadesh. So this is the secret. And any one of you can become a guru. It is not that I am an extraordinary man, an extraordinary god coming from some mysterious place. It is not that. It is a very simple thing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Yari Deka Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh. So I request you to follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions, that you also become a guru at your home. It is not that you have to make a gigantic show of becoming a guru. The father has to become a guru. The mother has to become a guru. Actually, in the Shastra, it is said that one should not become a father. One should not become a mother if one does not become a guru to his children. So I hope that all of you, men, women, boys and girls, become spiritual masters and follow this principle. Simply, sincerely follow the principle and speak to the general public. Then you become Krishna's favorite. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Natcha tasman manusheshu kaschim me priyakritama. One who is doing this humble service of preaching word, Krishna consciousness, nobody is dearer to me than him. So if you want to become recognized by Krishna very quickly, take up this process of becoming a spiritual master. Present the Bhagavad Gita as it is, then your life is perfect. So on Prabhupada's order, he is requesting that you all become spiritual masters and save whatever land you are in. And we pray that the Art of Teaching course has somehow helped you in your service to Prabhupada.
Jai Prabhupada ki jai.